It's all right. You can tell me, he said, noticing my worried expression. Why wouldn't they come?
I won't get in trouble, I asked.
You won't. I promise. Please tell me.
Because everyone is scared of Jawed Saab. They're scared to come into his center.
But this isn't his center, he said. His family sponsored the building and helped pay for the startup costs, but everything else, my salary, the materials, the books, it's all funded by the Ministry of Education.
The people here don't care who paid for what. The Han family's name is attached to it, and that's all they need to know.
Well, that's just great.
He pulled up his laptop. He opened a bright white screen with a small box and typed. Words transformed with the touch of his fingers on the keyboard.
Is that an email?
He turned to look at me.
I wasn't reading it, I blushed. It's just, I've seen people do that before on television. Nasreen Budgie does it too.
Yes, he turned back to the screen. I'm letting the people back at headquarters know what the situation is. See what we can do.
How much faster is it to send a message this way than through the postal service?
He laughed, but when he saw my expression, he cleared his throat. It's definitely faster than the postal service. Want to pull up a chair? I can show you how it works.
When I sat next to him, he explained how people had email addresses just like they had home addresses. You could send messages from your own email address to other people with email addresses, and whatever you wrote came to the other person in a matter of seconds. It was like a telephone for words.
That must make life so much easier, I said.
Yes. He paused and studied me. Want me to show you some more about computers?
Really?
Sure, he said. We have an hour. May as well teach someone something.
He pulled up a blank page with colored squares lining the side.
Ignore the English letters. I'm just showing you how to use the mouse to click and drag. The basics.
He clicked on a pink square. Then he clicked on the white space and drew a pink circle. He clicked on a black square and dotted two eyes. With the green, he dotted a nose. With the blue, a smile.
See? He said. Easy. Now copy me.
Drawing a face?
I laughed.
A computer is simple once you get the hang of it, but you have to get the basics down, he said. It may seem silly to draw a picture, but it's the simple things that pave the road for the rest of it.
The rest of the hour vanished as I copied his drawings. We tried more complicated shapes. I learned to click, to drag, to drop.
I might be able to find some reading or math software for you next time you come, he said.
Thank you so much. I glanced back at the basket. Would it be okay if I borrowed a book?
One of those? He laughed. I think you'll find those a little dull if you've been reading Iqbal.
Not for me, I said. For Fatima. She's a child who works at the estate. I'm teaching her to read.
A fellow teacher.
He smiled and handed me a book.
Of course.
A fellow teacher? Me?
I almost laughed, but he was right. I might not have had my own classroom, but I was teaching Fatima. So I was a teacher.
I walked out of the center with a smile on my face.
I had forgotten how my mind buzzed after a lesson. I'd forgotten how each answer my teachers gave led to 10 new questions. I'd forgotten how alive it all made me feel. My new teacher had given me a reason to dream again.
Chapter 38.
I have a surprise for you, I told Fatima the next evening.
I had left Nasreen Budgie watching television in the living room and slipped into the kitchen where Fatima was putting the leftovers from the evening meal in the fridge.
Surprise?
Fatima squinted at me.
I pulled out the book from behind my back.
A book?
Her eyes widened.
Could I read it?
Well, maybe some of the words, I said.
Want to read together? We can see which ones you can try to sound out.
Fatima hurried over to me as I turned to the first page. I read her the story of a lion and a mouse. The lion saved the mouse, and as the story continued, the mouse saved the lion in return. I watched her mouth form some of the words in disbelief. Sure, the words were simple, but it was happening. Fatima was learning to read.
Fatima, you're doing it! See how many words you knew?
Fatima beamed. The doorbell chimed. I shut the book and glanced at the clock. It was just after dinner. People never came at this hour. Fatima and I stepped out of the kitchen and walked down the hallway to the foyer. We saw Bilal hurrying to the front door. He looked out the window. His hand tightened on the doorknob before opening it. I knew before he opened it. It was the police again. Nasreen Baji strode toward the door as the two officers stepped into the foyer. They were different from the ones who came last time.
I apologize for disrupting you at this late hour, the bearded officer said. We need to speak with Jawad Saab. It's an urgent matter, and we are unable to reach him by phone.
He's not home, Nasreen Baji replied.
Where might he be?
I'm not sure.
His own mother doesn't know where he is, the other officer muttered.
Excuse me?
She raised her voice.
Do you think we enjoy these regular intrusions? Hans Saab will not be amused when he finds out how late at night you came to harass his wife.
I apologize for Usman, the bearded officer interjected.
He handed her a card.
It's just that it's important we speak to him.
I will relay the message. Her face remained stony until they walked out of the foyer.
They've never done that before,
she exclaimed once they were gone.
They would never dare.
She looked at the card.
What on earth is going on?
She picked up her phone.
I need to make some calls, she said to me. Go look and see if anything needs to be done in the kitchen.
She headed up the stairs to her bedroom.
Can you read the book to me again?
Fatima tugged at my chemise.
Tomorrow. One last time, please.
We slipped back into the kitchen. She listened, not moving a muscle as I read to her again. When I finished, Fatima leaned up and kissed my cheek.
Thank you, she said.
I knew learning to read wouldn't change the fact that Fatima was trapped here like I was, cleaning floors, dusting baseboards, and peeling potatoes. But at least by teaching her to read, I gave her a window to see worlds beyond ours, and a chance to imagine leaving the walls of this estate, and to feel free, even if it was only for a little while. Chapter 39. Asif was already sitting at the desk at the literacy center, typing on his laptop, when I walked into his classroom. His eyebrows were knit in concentration. He nodded when he saw me. I sat down across from him and pushed the book I'd borrowed across the table to him.
Thank you for lending me the book, I told him.
How did she like it? He asked.
She loved it. She made me read it so many times this morning, I think she's memorized the story.
That's great, he smiled. I have some easier ones you can take for her today. She might even be able to read those all the way through on her own, based on the letters and sounds she knows. And good news, I found some great software that teaches math and reading. I've ordered it for the center, and it should be here in time for our next session.
Really? Thank you so much.
While we wait for it to come in, I thought you could practice how to take a multiple-choice online test. I found a few basic reading passages. They're a little silly, but they'll do the job while we wait for the software. He pushed the laptop toward me and pulled his chair next to me. A giggle escaped when I saw the screen. An elephant, a dog, a cat, and a mouse grinned at me on screen.
I warned you,
Asif laughed. I clicked on the green arrow. It opened a new page with the story. The elephant chases the dog. The dog chases the cat. The cat chases the mouse. The mouse chases the ant. The ant chases the elephant. And around they go.
Okay, now that that's done, he rolled his eyes. Let's go to the multiple choice part. Click the prompt below. It will open a smaller screen with the questions.
I stared at the screen.
Amal? Something wrong?
It's cruel.
What do you mean?
This poem. It's trying to say there is always someone to go after someone and keep the balance of power equal. But it's not true. The elephant is in control. The mouse, the cat, the ant, they can do what they like, but sooner or later they will all be gone except the elephant. Pretending otherwise is foolish.
There is a saying, elephants fear no other animal but ants. Who is to say if it's true or not, but it's not true. The biggest are not afraid of the smallest. In the end, the biggest wins. The story is trying to teach young children about justice and fairness.
But life isn't fair. I will be a servant for the rest of my life because I spoke back to the wrong person. I will be indebted to him my entire life. I was going to be a teacher. I was going to go to college. All my dreams are gone because one person has the power to crush them. And guess what happened to the last group of people who tried to stop him? He burned their village to the ground. I saw the deserted village with my own eyes. They lost everything. And Jawadsab? He gained more. The bigger always have all the power. They aren't scared of the little people. It just doesn't work like that. My hands shook. I placed them on the desk to steady myself. Why did a silly poem affect me so much? I moved to apologize, but he spoke first.
Amal, I'm sorry. I had no idea of your circumstances. But even in difficult situations, especially in difficult situations, you can't lose hope. Things change. They might even change for you one day.
He said it with such conviction. He could have fooled me if I didn't know better.
My great-grandfather was a judge, he continued. My grandfather was a lawyer. My father is a lawyer. He's argued cases in front of the highest courts. When I told him I wanted to be a teacher, he laughed at me. Then he threatened to defund my education. But I held strong. I found a way. I'm the first one to be a teacher in my family. No one supported me, but I did it because this is what I always wanted to do. If I thought nothing would change, nothing ever would. I know the situation is different, but things can change, even when you don't think they will.
You're from a big city, I said. It's different here.
That's not true. Things are changing in villages all over the country, even here.
He hesitated before adding,
especially here.
He minimized the poem on the screen and clicked a new website. He typed for a moment, and then a news story flashed across the screen. Salim Mushtaq still missing, as local landlord is investigated. A photo of Jawad Saab stared back at me.
The son of a diplomat disappeared not far from here,
Asif explained.
Apparently, he's one of quite a few to go missing around here. But considering who he is, and that election season is approaching, the police are forced to take it seriously, and they're looking into Jawad Saab's possible involvement.
I stared at the eyes gleaming back at me from the screen.
No one would have bothered to investigate a family like the Hans even a few years ago,
Asif said.
But people all around the country are fighting the status quo. Things are changing.
I hoped what Asif was saying was true, but I found it hard to believe. Asif couldn't understand how things worked here, and the absolute power a family like the Hans held in a place like ours.
Chapter 40. Nabila, Bilal, and I lingered by the door to the main veranda, watching Nazreen. She sat on a wicker chair, the tea in her hands long cold, a folded newspaper resting on her lap.
"What's going on?" Nabila asked. "I've never seen her like this."
"Jawad's been gone for days and hasn't returned a single call," Bilal replied.
"I heard her this morning," I admitted. "She also left a message for her husband. She was so upset, I thought she might cry."
"Jawad Saab is in some sort of trouble," Bilal said.
"I think that's why he doesn't take me along with him on his trips anymore. He thinks if he doesn't take me, I won't find out what's going on."
"I read a news article about it," I whispered. "They are investigating if he had something to do with a missing person."
"Who was it?" Nabila asked me.
"It had to be someone important to have the police poking their noses around here so much."
"Enough!"
Mumtaz appeared and frowned at us.
"I hope you are not gossiping about the hands that feed us," she said. "It's not our concern what they might be up to."
Nabila glanced at me and rolled her eyes. But before she could say anything else, the front door thudded. Nasreen Baji's eyes widened when Jawad Saab stepped onto the veranda. He was accompanied by a man with a shock of white hair and a thick mustache, wearing a white shalwar kameez. Nasreen Baji jumped up and rushed toward them.
"You're home!" she exclaimed. "Never thought I'd see the day."
"Needed to sort out this police business once and for all," the man replied. "I'll be paying them a personal visit today."
"Mumtaz, go and air out Hansab's wardrobe," Nasreen Baji said.
"No need. I have to leave this evening."
"What?"
Her expression drooped.
"After all this time away, you can't even stay the night?"
"You don't know the pressures I'm under. The federal police are on my back. They're not as simple to shake off as the ones here. Although they've gotten worse here, too."
He glared at Jawad Saab.
"I keep you here to handle things, and I expect them to be handled. Never thought you'd make more problems for me."
"Is this about that missing boy?"
She held up her newspaper.
"Why did I have to read about it in the papers like a common villager?"
"I told you already," Jawad Saab said. "I don't want you to have to concern yourself with this."
"Well, it's hard not to concern myself when ill-mannered police officers charge into our house. I've never been so disrespected."
"They dared to be rude to you?"
Hansab's face reddened.
"Yes. Why do you think I've been trying to call you so many times?"
Nasreen turned to her son.
"You could have at least sent me a message to let me know you were all right, Jawad. The way they barged in, can you imagine what went through my mind?"
"I'm sorry," Jawad Saab said. "I will take care of it," Hansab told her. "They won't bother you again."
"And the things they're saying in the papers?"
Nasreen Baji shook her head. Her eyes watered.
"Jawad says none of it is true,"
Hansab said.
"That boy comes by to see Jawad, gets drunk, and then decides to play cards with the locals. Loses. Refuses to pay. Now he's missing. With the way that boy was used to mouthing off to people, sooner or later something was going to happen to him. But it will blow over soon enough. Nothing to do with us."
Jawad Saab's phone rang. He glanced at the screen before shoving it in his pocket.
"Bilal,"
Jawad Saab said,
"send my meal to my room."
"Yes, Saab."
He rushed off. I watched Hansab talk to Nasreen Baji. There he was, the man I'd heard stories about all my life, the man whose photos lined the hallways I walked through each day. He was the boogeyman our mothers invoked to urge us to finish our dinner. When I was Safa's age, I imagined him to be 10 feet tall, with beady eyes and pointy teeth. Hafsa was convinced he breathed fire.
But now, he stood a few steps away from me. And he didn't breathe fire, and he wasn't 10 feet tall. He and Jawad Saab were powerful and mean-spirited men. But maybe, just maybe, even they weren't invincible.
Chapter 41.
Jawad Saab and his father are leaving after dinner tonight, Bilal told me later that afternoon, as we finished cleaning up from lunch. You should be safe to grab a book if you want to, then. I thanked him and dried my hands before walking over to the servants' veranda. It was empty today. I exhaled and rubbed my temples. Helping Hamid rush to prepare a last-minute lavish lunch for Hansab had left me tired. I wanted to sit down for a moment to catch my breath, but Mumtaz had asked Nabila to clear the teacups from the main veranda, and I knew she was still putting away the dishes from lunch. The sooner we put the house back in order, the sooner all of us could rest. The flowers swayed in the cool afternoon breeze as I strolled through the garden toward the bushes bordering the main veranda. Just then, the sound of voices drifted over to me. I paused by the bushes. They were male voices coming from the other side, steps from where I stood. It had to be Jawad Saab and his father.
What did you want me to do? Jawad argued. He gambles more than he can pay back, and then threatens me? Why should I have been the one to let it go? What is our reputation worth if we take disrespect like that?
Well, thanks to you, we now have federal investigators poking their noses in our business, Hansab said.
They won't find anything. My men took care of it.
Let's hope you're right, for both our sakes.
I know I'm right. My men enforce all my debts, and they're meticulous. They wouldn't harm the hand that lines their pockets.
Which one took care of this one?
Rehan. I only trusted it to him.
Tell him to move the body farther out after the investigation dies down. I'm not comfortable with it so close to home.
Their voices stopped. A door opened and shut in the distance. Tightness squeezed my chest. I knew Jawad Saab's men threatened people and destroyed property. But they killed people? Fozia had said one of his officers was demanding more money. Was this the danger she faced if she couldn't pay? I backed away from the bushes. Only then did I realize I wasn't alone. Nabila was staring at me. Her expression was somber.
Nabila,
I began.
How much had she heard?
She shook her head furiously and pressed a finger to her mouth.
Don't say a word,
she whispered, gesturing to the balconies and windows all around us.
You never know who is listening.
Chapter 42.
Nabila is acting strange, Mumtaz said to me that evening.
What do you mean?
She didn't eat lunch. Caught her wandering the servants' quarters a little while ago. She was crying. Won't tell me what it is.
I'll talk to her, I offered.
I walked down to the servants' quarters and peeked into each half-opened room until at last I found her. She was sitting cross-legged on the bed, studying her nails. I took in the dirty concrete floor, the cracked walls. This was the room I might have had.
We need to talk, I said.
Not now,
she whispered without looking up.
Jawad and his father are leaving tonight. Meet me and Bilal in the library after everyone is asleep.
Nabila and Bilal were already in the library when I managed to sneak out of Nasreen Budgie's room. The room was dark, lit only by the glow of a small desk lamp. When I closed the door behind me, Nabila walked over to the window and lifted a small ceramic pot resting on the sill. She stuck a finger into the dirt and pulled out a key.
Nabila, this isn't a good idea, Bilal said. I have to know,
she told him. She turned and handed me the key.
Please, I need your help. He keeps the debts people owe him filed in there.
She pointed to the filing cabinets.
Everything everyone owes him can be found in those cabinets. Can you see if the name Latif is in there? Babar Latif?
Do you think he borrowed money?
Knowing him, yes, she said. Nabila,
Bilal sighed.
I know, Nabila said. But I have to find out.
I turned the key in the first silver cabinet and went through the files. When I tried the next one, I saw his name.
It's here.
I pulled it out and showed her.
What does it say?
She asked. A tear slipped down her cheek. Bilal put an arm around her.
He borrowed some money.
I scanned the handwritten notes.
Gambling debts.
A loan for a motorcycle. The records stop about 4 or 5 months ago.
Makes sense. He's been dead 5 months.
Oh, Nabila. I lowered the folder.
Was he a relative?
My cousin.
He was the only one who never forgot me, who checked in on me and made sure I was okay. He was the sweetest person I knew. They found his body in the fields not far from here. He had just come to see me that morning.
Her voice cracked.
Well, at least now I know what happened. I'm so sorry, Nabila.
Her face crumpled. Her body was racked with sobs. She didn't push me away when I put my arms around her.
Why'd you have to find out?
Bilal kicked the filing cabinet.
I told you not to. You hurt yourself for no reason. It's not like knowing what happened changes anything.
There it was again. Nothing would change. This family was so powerful, there was no use in trying to fight them.
But just because something seems impossible, does that mean we just don't try?
I asked. They both turned to look at me.
Try what?
Bilal asked.
There's nothing we can do. No one will do anything about it.
But what if we could do something? I said.
What if we at least tried to stop him?
How? Nabila brushed away her tears.
What if we told someone what we heard? Told them we know they killed that diplomat's son? Maybe then something would happen.
Right, Nabila sniffed.
They'll take our word over theirs.
She was right. What reason would anyone have to believe us? Bilal cleared his throat then.
What if it wasn't just our word?
He said quietly.
What if we could tell them where the body was?
Oh, Bilal, Nabila whispered.
As his personal servant, I know more than I wish I did.
He studied the ground.
He buried the guy by the third tree, past the sign for Minawala.
We fell silent for a moment.
But who do we tell this to? Nabila asked. Mumtaz would kill us if she knew we were even talking about something like this.
I know someone, I said.
My teacher. His father is a lawyer. He'll know who to get the information to.
I said it with such conviction, I almost believed myself. The truth was, I had no idea if a lawyer could help us, or if Asif would agree in the first place. But I knew I had to try. If everyone decided nothing could change, nothing ever would.
Chapter 43 Nasreen Baji and Jawad Saab sat at the dining table eating breakfast. Mumtaz brought out fresh parathas and a plate of softened butter. Everything was normal. It was an ordinary morning. I reminded myself of this. Nabila placed a glass of orange juice next to Nasreen Baji's plate and a glass next to Jawad Saab. He talked with his mother. He needed new suits. The gray one looked worn. After they finished their meals, Jawad Saab yawned.
No chai for me today, he rubbed his eyes. I'm taking a quick nap.
You see? Nasreen Baji admonished him. You work too hard. One can't be up at all hours and expect not to be affected.
I gathered the dishes to take to the kitchen. I washed up the pots and pans and dried my hands. I picked up my satchel and headed to Ghulam's waiting car. I hurried down the narrow corridor toward Asif's classroom. He was at his desk sorting through papers when I stepped inside.
I need your help, I said. I tried to stay steady, but everything was catching up to me. The room spun.
Asif took my arm and helped me to a chair.
Take a deep breath.
Okay, good. Now tell me, what's wrong? I hadn't planned to blurt out everything. But the words wouldn't stop flowing. About the officers, the body, the threats to my neighbors. When I finished, I caught my breath. Asif's face had gone pale.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't burden you with this, I said.
Don't apologize. I'm glad you told me.
The third tree passed the sign for Minawala. My voice wavered. That's where the body is buried. At least I hope it's still there. I thought maybe you or your father could share that information wherever it needs to go. He's a lawyer, you said?
Asif stared at me, and then he rested his elbows on the table and rubbed his temples. Sharing this with my father doesn't mean anything will actually happen. But if word gets out that they are onto a body, Jawad might hear. There's a chance he could tie it to me, which could lead to you.
Oh, I said. I didn't even think of that.
You live in that house, Amal. If he finds out, it could be bad for you. I thought of Hazarabad and the burned fields, the charred orange groves. I thought of Fozia.
It's worth the risk, I said.
I'll call my father, he said. I'll see what he says.
Thank you, Asif. I'm forever indebted to you.
There's no debt, Amal. He studied me for a moment. I'm not sure I've ever met anyone as brave as you, he finally said.
I'm not brave. I'm terrified. I just don't have a choice.
You always have a choice. Making choices even when they scare you because you know it's the right thing to do, that's bravery.
Chapter 44. Nasreen Baji spoke with her son about marriage prospects over breakfast.
She comes from a good family, Nasreen Baji told him. Pretty, too. What harm is there in meeting her? And her father is in politics also. Who knows where it could lead?
I thought I'm supposed to celebrate my life in exile here, he snorted. No politics for me. I'm doing the most important job there is.
Jawad, you're 24 years old. Enough with the sarcasm already.
I've met 4 girls this month alone. It's not my fault none of them is adequate.
Listen, we both know what this is about. She lowered her voice. It's past time to move on. You'll find someone else you like just as much, but only if you give them a chance.
Jawad Saab looked down at the table.
Fine, he finally said. I'll meet her.
I took in the scene before me, mother and son chatting, servants picking up empty bowls and dishes, while others brought in white, creamy kheer with crushed pistachios. The scent of brewing chai enveloped the room each time the kitchen doors parted. It had been almost a week since I last saw Asif. Every day I waited for a knock on the door, a phone call, a look of fear across Jawad Saab's face. But nothing happened. Everything continued, just as it always had. My hands shook. I stepped into the hallway to compose myself. Fatima approached me.
I'm making up my own story tonight, she said. Baba got me some paper and a freshly sharpened pencil. I'm naming one of the girls after you.
It was supposed to be a surprise, but I couldn't wait. But I need your help writing it. I'll do all the pictures. Will you help me when we're done here?
Sure. I nodded at the right moments as she explained her story. Maybe the Han family really was untouchable. Nothing had happened to them. Maybe nothing ever would. They had ruled this village for centuries. His mother would take him to meet a prospective bride today. Soon, Jawad would marry. He would have a child. And that child would grow up to rule my village. Did I really think we could undo it all?
You're not listening, Fatima sang out to me. Why are you always thinking? It's good to listen, too.
Sorry, I said. After we clean up from breakfast, I'm all yours. A doorbell chimed in the distance. Then, a hard-knuckled knock. I walked into the dining room as Jawad Saab wiped his hands on a napkin and tossed it on a plate.
The police? His mother asked.
Who else?
How long will they be? Nasreen Baji looked at her watch.
We're leaving to meet the girl and her family in an hour, remember?
I'll get them out of here in a few minutes.
Footsteps echoed off the foyer. And then, I heard Jawad Saab protest. Then I heard him yelling and swearing. I rushed into the hallway. Fatima trailed behind me. Nasreen Baji's face was paper white. There were three officers here. New ones. And they were slapping handcuffs onto Jawad Saab's wrists.
This is a mistake! Jawad Saab screamed. My father will speak to you. He won't forget your names.
We imagine so, one of them said. We brought him in a few hours ago for questioning.
Upon hearing this, Nasreen Baji started shouting at the officers. She threatened them. She begged them. They didn't respond. It was as if she didn't exist. Bilal stood to the side, his back pressed against the wall. Other servants gathered in the foyer. Mumtaz rushed over to comfort Nasreen Baji. I stared at the open door, the empty space through which they marched Jawad Saab. It happened. Jawad Saab had been arrested. Chapter 45. The television buzzed low in the background of Nasreen Baji's bedroom. It had now been 4 days since Jawad Saab was taken away. At first, Nasreen Baji turned on the television news each morning as though she hoped they would report it all as a big misunderstanding. But once the detectives came and carted away all the silver files, the ones with the debts he and his family collected from everyone in our villages, she stopped hoping. It was still strange to see Jawad Saab's face all over the news. But even stranger was seeing my little village, which didn't even register as a dot on a map, no longer quite so forgotten. This morning, the camera panned to show our rivers, fields, orange groves, and green stalks of sugarcane. The newscaster on the television reported on the changing times and the uprooting of the status quo. The newspapers Nasreen Baji left lying on the nightstand all echoed the same. The crumbling of the feudal era. Local landlord overthrown. How one man's ego led to his family's downfall. The media tied the leaked information to a local officer who claimed responsibility at a press conference in front of dozens of microphones. I recognized him immediately as the mustached officer who came into the estate months earlier. He was going to be one of the many star witnesses in Jawad Saab's trial. I glanced at Nasreen Baji. She stared at the screen. Her eyes were red and her cheeks were blotchy. It was as if the contours of her face had changed overnight. I was glad her son could not hurt anyone ever again. But seeing Nasreen Baji's grief and knowing her pain was partly because of me made me feel an odd sort of guilt. It was the strangest thing to hold such different feelings inside myself at once. And as much as Nasreen Baji's life had changed, mine hadn't. Jawad Saab's arrest didn't mean I could just leave. My debt didn't vanish when the officers carted the silver filing cabinets away. I lived here,
and I still washed dishes and helped with dinner. I still brought in fresh flowers and gave the linens to the cleaning girl. I still massaged Nasreen Baji's head and drew her bath. Everything had changed for so many people, but for me, nothing really had. "I'll get your breakfast, Nasreen Baji." I brought her tissues from the dresser. She took one and wiped her eyes. She didn't respond. I went into the kitchen and filled the percolator with water.
"Add some more water for me?" Mumtaz asked.
She stood to the side, her shoulders hunched. Tokir and Ghulam were there too. Tokir pulled out cups from the servant's cupboard and poured in water.
"Are you okay, Mumtaz?" I asked her. "You look pale."
"How can I be okay?" She shook her head.
"Everything is a mess,"
Tokir agreed. He took a sip of water.
"Been here 40 years. Never thought I'd see the day."
"But if he did the things the news said he did..."
I hesitated.
"Isn't it a good thing that he's been caught?"
"With the two of them behind bars, what happens to us?"
Ghulam asked.
"I need this job. My son's wife is about to have a baby. My other grandchild needs to see a specialist in Lahore for his heart. What are we going to do without my income?"
I added an extra cup of water to the percolator and glanced out the window. Other servants were standing outside. I imagined their discussions were the same as the ones in this kitchen. The conversations had run in a loop since that day. Would they really convict him? And what did this mean for us? I thought Jawad Saab's arrest would be good for everyone, but it turned out change, no matter how good and necessary, came with a price. Nabila and Bilal weren't anywhere to be seen. The three of us hadn't talked about what happened since the arrest, afraid to say a word in case someone overheard us. But I walked into the servants' quarters. The tinny sound of the television news echoed in the hallway. Bilal's door was open wide, but Nabila's was closed. I tapped on it before opening it. Both of them were inside. Bilal stood against the back wall, his arms crossed. Nabila was on her bed, staring at yesterday's discarded newspaper. Grim-faced black-and-white photos of Han Saab and Jawad Saab's faces were front and center.
"I'd ask you to read it to me, but I think I know what it says," she said without looking up.
"It's more of the same," I agreed. "They found the body, right where he said it was."
"So many reporters outside," Bilal said. "There are even more today than yesterday. They'd climb in through one of the windows here if we didn't have the guards and the brick walls around this place."
Nabila looked up at Bilal and then at me.
"Do you think he's gone for good?"
"I hope so," I said.
"It just doesn't feel real."
Nabila shook her head.
"I still feel like I'll wake up tomorrow and find out it was all a dream."
Nabila was right. It did feel surreal. But I glanced at the newspaper in her lap. The black and white photos looking back at me were proof it wasn't a dream. After all the people he had hurt, after the generations this family had haunted, we helped bring Jawad Saab and his father to justice. I smiled. No one here except the three of us would ever know it was a group of servants who brought this family down. No one would ever know it was a girl who helped save our villages. But I knew. Chapter 46.
"Amal, I need to talk to you," Nasreen Baji said to me the next week.
She patted the space on her bed, motioning for me to join her. "I'm going to Islamabad for a little while," she said when I sat down. "My eldest is coming to get me tomorrow morning. It's too hard to be here right now. This house is too big for me." My heart sank. Islamabad was hours from here. As her maidservant, I would be expected to go with her, even farther from my family and all I knew.
"That's good,"
I managed to say. It's important to be with your loved ones, especially right now. I'm off to see my sister in a little bit, before I go. She smiled at me. It was the first smile since Jawad Saab had left. She will be happy to see you, I told her.
I hope so, she said, twisting the edge of her scarf. It's been a long time.
It's never too late to see your family.
You're right, and you should be with your family, too.
I looked at her with a start.
You may as well hear it from me first. There's no use in keeping everyone on while we wait to see what happens. I'm closing up the house. Mumtaz will come with me to Islamabad, of course, and a few people, like the gardener, will stay on here to take care of the estate. But most everyone else will be let go.
You're going to let me go?
I thought about keeping you, she smiled at me sadly. I've enjoyed your company and I've grown fond of you. I see in you so much the girl I was. But you belong with your family. Your debt is forgiven. I wanted to hug Nasreen Baji, but I had never embraced her before. Whatever spell she was under, whatever sacred moment this was, I didn't want to risk breaking it.
Thank you, I whispered.
Later that afternoon, I sat with the others as Nasreen Baji shared what was to come. Bilal's face broke open with disbelief and then widened into a smile. Hamid hugged Fatima, but Ghulam was somber, and when I looked at Mumtaz, she was crying.
But you're going to stay on. I walked over and clasped her hands. You're going to her home in Islamabad.
But this was my home. She looked up at me. Take care of yourself, and check in on an old lady now and then if you can, she said through her tears.
I will.
I hugged her. I felt surprised by the sadness overtaking me. I had waited so long for this day, and I was glad to leave, but I would miss Mumtaz and the other servants. Fatima approached me a little while after. She held Hamid's hand.
We're leaving. My parents don't want me. Baba said I can go home with him.
Where are you going? I asked Hamid.
Back home, he said. Imrawala. Wife and children are waiting. Have been for too long. Have a couple of grandkids Fatima's age.
He looked down at Fatima and smiled.
It will be nice for you to have some children to play with.
Fatima's eyes watered when I walked over to her. She was my first friend here. The person who gave me a chance before anyone else would.
When you finish writing your story, will you send it to me?
I asked her.
I want to read it.
She looked at the ground and didn't respond.
We'll see each other at the market. Hamid's village is just on the other side from where I live. I'll find you.
We'll stay in touch, I promised.
But it won't be the same, she whispered.
No, I told her. It won't be the same. But maybe it will be better. She hugged me. I watched her follow Hamid out the door, out of sight. I picked up my satchel and felt a tap. Nabila.
Here.
She pushed a cloth bag toward me.
I packed some snacks for you, some water, in case you need it for the walk home.
Where are you going? I asked her.
Back home?
No, never. I'm going to live with my cousin Latif's wife in my old village, near Simranwala. She needs all the help she can get.
You going back to school? I asked her.
I'm not sure. She shrugged. The literacy center is free, Nabila. I really liked it, and it's not far from where you'll be. Give it a chance. We might even bump into each other. It's just around the corner from where I live.
Maybe. And you better go back to school. You have to become a teacher. It's not every day you get a second chance like this.
I hope so, I smiled. I could hardly believe there was a time she was anything but a friend to me. I leaned over and embraced her. I pulled my suitcase behind me as dusk settled. A crescent moon was etched into the sky above. Soon stars would glitter overhead. But I didn't need them to guide me. I knew my way home. I thought about what Nabila had said. Maybe I would be a teacher one day. Or maybe I'd write a book. Or set up schools like Asif. Or maybe I would do all these things. I knew now that one person could hold many different dreams and see them all come true. And one was coming true right now. I was leaving this estate behind me. The walk took longer than I thought. I kept expecting someone to come after me, to snatch me away and take me back to the estate. But no one came. I kept walking. Each step took me closer to my parents, to Seema and Omar and Hafsa. I didn't look back. I followed the winding path, walking over potholes, some so deep they seemed to crack open into the center of the earth. I wondered what would happen next. Would Jawad Saab be released one day? Would he come searching for me? I thought not knowing would scare me, but I didn't feel afraid. Today, I was free, and even if I didn't know what the future held, I knew I was going home. And right now, in this moment, this was enough.
Author's note. In 2012, Malala Yousafzai was on her way home from school in the Swat Valley region of Pakistan when she was shot at point-blank range. Her crime? Malala wanted an education, and she regularly spoke out against people who opposed her right to do so. When Malala was attacked, people from around the world stopped and paid attention, and when she recovered, they rooted for her as she renewed her quest for an education not just for herself, but for all girls. Malala continues to embody what it means to be a strong girl. She builds schools, advocates against violence, and is the youngest recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. Children around the world know her story. Malala is truly brave, but even she acknowledges that she is one of many young people all over the world who fight for what they believe in, who do the right thing even when it is difficult, even when the risks are overwhelming. Most of these people will never get a headline in the newspaper. We will never know who they are. And sadly, most of them will not get the type of happy ending Malala has. But they are still brave and courageous and worthy of respect, whether a spotlight shines on them or not. Amal is a fictional character, but she represents countless other girls in Pakistan and around the world who take a stand against inequality and fight for justice in often unrecognized but important ways. We don't have to make headlines to help change the world for the better. Everything we do in our communities and beyond to impart good is important and matters. The issue of indentured servitude covered in this book is a global problem affecting millions of people, including in the United States. While some experience situations similar to Amal's, unfortunately, the vast majority suffer much more difficult situations with no end in sight. Amal's reality is far luckier than most who endure this horrendous practice. There are brave girls all over the world. They may feel afraid sometimes, like Amal, but doing the right thing, despite the risks it may involve, is the bravest thing there can be. It is my hope this story shines a light on brave girls everywhere. This is Priya Iyer.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Amal Unbound by Aisha Saeed. This program was directed by Harry Nangle. Executive Producer, Karen Chakonsky. Text copyright, 2018, by Aisha Saeed. Production copyright, 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.